Jesus, thank you for Debbie. Thank you that you have been with her this last year. Thank you for the courage you have given her in sharing her story this morning. And we bless her with your presence. And you say that blessed are the feet of those who bring good news. And so we bless her feet in your name this morning, Jesus. Give her peace, give her calm. And that the love that we have for her fill her this morning in the same way that your love does as she shares with us. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.
Good morning, everyone. And a special good morning to all my friends and family that came. When Kevin asked me if I'd be willing to share my journey over this past year, I said this isn't a story for an Advent Sunday. He asked me to think about it. He said he thought my story was one from darkness to hope, like the Christmas story. As I thought about how I was going to tell Kevin thanks, but no thanks, I'm not up to sharing my story yet, I remembered an email that I received at Christmas time last year from a good friend, Brad, that talked about darkness and hope. In it was a short sentence that I thought about often. It said, "The hope needs the dark." And also in that poem was this short poem. "The hope of Christmas is the light of the world gathering us out of darkness, a light that dispels the darkness, a hope that shines in darkness, a love that guides in darkness, to the one who is discovered in darkness." Thinking back to this email helped me to realize that maybe this is the right time to share. So here I am. I'm not a person to journal regularly, but during the initial months of my diagnosis, I did. The journal has helped me to recall parts of my story that I had already forgotten. I'm becoming grateful that Kevin asked me to share this morning because it has forced me to remember and write down my journey. This writing has been healing and faith-building for me. My prayer is through the sharing of my honest, but not always pretty journey, that you may be encouraged to allow yourself to be true to what you are experiencing in your times of darkness, or to see how you can be a beacon of hope to those going through difficult times. Back in July of 2018, I started to get a lot of pain in my abdomen. I had a liver cyst that grew to the point of needing to be operated on. It's a long story, and the details don't really matter, except to say that after the surgery, I had a follow-up appointment with the surgeon in October. I'd already had an ultrasound in prep for the appointment, but not blood work, as this was not ordered. My husband, Don, just happened to be having his annual physical 2 days before my surgeon's appointment. His doctor and our close friend, also named Don, asked how I was doing. Don said, "Good." Dr. Don asked how my blood tests looked, and my Don said that I hadn't had any done. Dr. Don said that I should for my upcoming appointment and gave me a requisition. I had the blood test done, and later that day I went online to see the results and was very worried by what I saw. The surgeon said the surgery was a success, but was also confused by my blood work results and referred me back to the liver specialist. I became alarmed at the surgeon's response and did not want to wait for a specialist appointment, so I made one with my family doctor. She said my labs weren't that bad, that I was healing from my surgery, but gave me another requisition for blood work to do in a month's time. That lab work came back worse. I persuaded my doctor to send me to a hematologist. Dr. Srinivasan had a cancellation, and I got an appointment quickly. My initial meeting with her was good. She's caring, efficient, a great communicator, and I liked her immediately. There were no time slots available for a bone marrow biopsy until January, so she left the office for a few minutes, and when she returned, she said that I have one the next morning at 7 a.m. A nurse had agreed to come in early to assist her. I also had a lot more blood work done. She scheduled an appointment for the following week to review the findings. Even though I didn't see it at the time, I now believe God was working through Dr. Don and Dr. Srinivasan to get me the treatment I needed quickly. My appointment was set for December 6th at 3 p.m. in Vancouver, but also on that day was a retirement lunch for Don and his business partner Brad at a Fort Langley restaurant. On the way to the restaurant, I asked Don to drop me off at the Coast Capital so I could fix a bank card issue. This was the first time I'd been in that branch. Then I would walk down the street to meet him at the restaurant. Lunch was lovely. Special friends from Winnipeg flew in to celebrate Don and Brad, but I was very distracted and found it hard to find enjoyment in the moment. We left for VGH at 2. My doctor was running late and my anxiety grew. When we were finally called into her office, she immediately said, "I'm so surprised by the results of your test. You have multiple myeloma, an incurable blood cancer. A normal bone marrow has about 3% of plasma cells, but you have 86%, and that's why your white, red, and platelet blood cells are so low." I asked what my prognosis is, and she said between 5 and 10 years. I don't really remember much of the rest of the appointment, except that I agreed that chemo should begin as soon as possible, and I said a lot of crazy things, like I'd better start my CPP when I turn 60. Even though I suspected something was wrong with me, I was still shocked that I had cancer. December 6th was supposed to be the beginning of retirement. We had so many plans, including lots of traveling. But this was the beginning of a different kind of journey, one that no one hopes to go on. The first few days after the diagnosis, I was just numb and stunned. I did not sleep. I spent a lot of time reading the booklets the doctor gave me about my disease. I learned that my treatment plan was done in 3 phases. The first phase is to reduce cancer as much as possible so my bone marrow can produce stem cells. The second phase is to collect my own stem cells, and the third is to have a stem cell transplant, or more commonly known as a bone marrow transplant. I learned that there are many effects from this cancer. A person can become anemic and or have little immunities. Fatigue and infections are very common, as well as organ damage, especially to the kidneys. But the scariest effect to me is that the cancer tends to eat away at the bones, so this disease can become really painful, and broken bones happen frequently. I started my chemotherapy on December 20th, on one of the shortest, darkest days of the year. Those initial weeks after diagnosis, I was surrounded by family and friends. I received flowers, cards, gifts, meals, baking. I felt the outpouring of care and love, but I didn't feel loved by God. After the shock of the diagnosis wore off, the darkness set in. I became very angry, angry about my illness and angry with God. I had usually been able to hear God's voice, but now I didn't. I felt abandoned by God. My trust in God was shattered. I felt cursed. I suffered the loss of many friends and family members over the past 12 years. And my experience is that those that I have loved, when they got sick, they died. Their prognosis proved accurate. There were no healings and no miracles. I did not have hope of a miracle for myself. I had thoughts like, is God a good father? Is he really perfect in all of his ways? My illness felt so unfair to me. Was I being punished? Was I to live in sickness and isolation the rest of my life? How could a loving God allow me to have multiple myeloma? I was only 57 years old. This is an older person's disease. Hadn't I been a good little Christian, giving generously and helping others? Why is God allowing this? Is there a purpose? Where is God in this? But really, at the heart of all my questions was, does God really love me? Even though I knew these thoughts were not helpful, I couldn't seem to stop them. I felt like a spiritual loser. Besides the questioning and the anger, I was also grieving the loss of my health, the future Don and I had planned for. My cancer would forever impact our decisions, but the hardest and darkest thoughts were about what I could possibly be missing out on. I did not want to miss out on growing old with Don. I did not want to miss out on being part of my children's and grandchildren's lives. I don't want to miss out on seeing my grandchildren become adults. I really love my life, and I just don't want to miss out, period. During this time, I still believed in God, but I didn't trust him. Bible knowledge, theology, the hope of heaven didn't take away my distress. My head knew the truths about Jesus, but my heart did not. Instead of my faith being a comfort to me or bringing me a peace beyond all understanding, it was a source of deep pain. It was Christmas time, the time of hope, but I didn't feel hopeful. Don was in his own pain over my cancer. He dealt with his pain very differently than me. I wanted to be alone and keep everything quiet, but Don wanted to reach out and let people know about our situation. I felt the need to honor his way of dealing with this. He sent out emails to family and friends about my diagnosis. I'm so grateful for his courage in reaching out. It was so moving to see the responses we received from friends far and near. When a friend, Michaela, who lives in Ethiopia, read Don's email, he fell to the ground and prayed for us. And then he responded to Don's email by saying that he felt led to come to us and pray for us. He had booked his flights and would be arriving on December 25th. I could spend an hour talking about our time with Michaela and how meaningful it was, but hopefully the shortened version will give you a little insight into the time we spent with him and how important our time together was. Michaela arrived just in time for Christmas dinner with our family. He told us of his journey coming here. He had encountered great opposition in Ethiopia on the day he left. It was a miracle that he made his flight. After dinner, we all gathered together for a time of prayer, which lasted about 2 hours, but felt like a few minutes. It was such a beautiful time of petition, praise, and togetherness. It was the first time since my diagnosis that I sensed God's presence. We all left this prayer time feeling encouraged. Michaela and Don and I spent much of the next day in prayer. At times, Michaela's prayers were very loud and powerful. He was so loud, I wondered if the neighbors might call the police. Michaela had many words from the Lord for Don and me. He also shared many stories of healings he had witnessed. At the end of the day, I felt God was birthing something new in me. That evening, Michaela said to me that he would pray that God would give me a dream so that we could pray about it the next day. I told him that I never remembered my dreams, but that night I did dream, and I did remember it. After breakfast, Michaela asked me if I had a dream and to tell him about it. My dream was I went into the Coast Capital Fort Langley branch to get some money out of the bank machine. The slip of paper said insufficient funds, so I walked across the bank to the teller and said, "There seems to be a problem because I know I have lots of money in my account." The teller looks at her computer and says, "There's no money," that there was a wire order transfer of $79,000 to Greece. Stunned and confused, I turned around and walked out of the bank. Well, that got Michaela very worked up. He kept saying very loudly, "What? You just walked away? You just walked out of the bank without trying to get your money back? You just walked away?" And you had to be there to see how excited he can get. His interpretation of my dream is that the money represented my health. I needed to fight to regain my health, not just accept my illness and be resigned to it. So he prayed that I would fight, both physically and spiritually. He said, in righteous anger, to pray against the acts of the enemy, to pray against the thief that seeks to steal and destroy. He also reminded me that God is for me and to believe anything is possible with God. A glimmer of hope began for me. Even though I could not hear God's voice, I realized that God could be speaking to me, and that I needed to look for God in new ways. I needed to develop eyes to see in the dark. I received so many words of encouragement and stories of hope in the initial 2 months after my diagnosis, like from Steve when he dropped off some Christmas baking. He told me of his health story and how he received a prognosis that he had less than 5 years to live, and that was more than 20 years ago. Steve said, "Believe the diagnosis, but not the prognosis." And from Paul, as he was watching the ocean while praying for me on a miserable stormy morning, he had the impression or vision that I would weather the storm, that I was a wave walker. I like that, a wave walker. But the word that I received from my daughter Kelsey impacted me the most. I still think about it all the time. I have to explain that one of the side effects of the chemo drugs was that I did not sleep well. I was usually awake at about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. I used these early morning hours to pray and journal. On this particular day, I was journaling about finding joy in the journey and what I had hoped to do when I recovered from treatments. On the top of the list after spending time with family and friends was to go on a hiking holiday. I spent the rest of the morning researching the possible hikes for Dawn and I to go on. Later that morning, I went to Kelsey's home for her to do healing energy work on me. After about an hour of her silently working on me, she said, "Mom, I see you going on a very long hike." To me, in that moment, it was God saying, "You will have health again." I had not shared with her my dream of a hiking trip, but God did. January and February were very difficult months. I was sick from the treatments and my immunities were very low, so I could not go out in public. During those two months were very dark spiritually. During this time, my girlfriend Audrey gave me a book on welcoming prayer. It is a little book that guides you through prayers for 40 days. We did it together for Lent. The welcoming prayers helped me to welcome all that I was feeling and to bring it to God, not to stuff those dark feelings down and rationalize why they were wrong. These prayers helped me to accept my feelings, both positive and negative, as part of the journey. I learned that darkness really is sacred ground, that the God who calls us into darkness will also sustain us and lead us through it. Richard Rohr says, "Darkness is a good and necessary teacher. It is not to be avoided, denied, run from, or explained away, and to fully experience darkness is an act of courage." He also says that our faith is strengthened every time we go through periods of questioning. There were a lot of tears shed during those prayers. I learned a lot about myself and God. March and April, the treatments became tolerable. I felt better, but I still had to stay home. And as the days became longer and brighter, so did my sense of God's presence. May started out with a great sense of hope, but proved to be a very tough month. May 3rd was my last induction chemo treatment. I was so happy and optimistic. I had a three-week break from treatments before the stem cell harvest began. We took advantage of this break by going to our place in the Caribou with the whole family. We had a wonderful weather and were really enjoying our time together when we received a call that our home had been robbed. The front door was ruined and a lot of stuff was stolen. Not only did they steal our computers, but the external hard drive, the CD, and stick backups too. All our pictures since we went digital were gone. On one of the backup sticks that was stolen were some documents, and on one document had some banking passwords. No account numbers, no bank information, just passwords, but the thieves managed to figure it out and began stealing money from our bank accounts. The theft felt like a punch in the gut. But the toughest blow happened 2 weeks later. On the first try at harvesting my stem cells, none were collected. This is a rare occurrence, and my doctor was very concerned and kept saying, "This is not good." I received an injection of another type of stem cell stimulating drug. The next morning, another attempt was to be tried. I left the hospital devastated. Medically speaking, a stem cell transplant was my best chance at receiving a remission. It hadn't occurred to me that there was a possibility that I wouldn't be able to harvest stem cells. Don sent out an email requesting prayer. Michaela and Paul called from Africa to pray with us. So many others prayed for me that evening. The next day, the harvest went a little bit better, but only about a third of what was needed was collected. We had a meeting with my doctor, and she said we needed to start over again. I would need another three-week break, then a big hit of chemo, then a 10-day break, then 10 days of three injections a day of another stem cell stimulating drug before attempting a harvest again. The first 2 weeks of the wait, I was able to do okay, but on the third week, I sank back into darkness. I was angry and scared. However, the darkness did not last long, a few days, and by the time the harvest began, I was hopeful again. This time the harvest was successful. The doctors and nurses were excited as Don and I were. Tears of happiness flowed throughout the ward. My transplant was rescheduled for the end of July. We had some time off again and used this time to visit our kids in Terrace and relax at the cabin. Even though I knew the stem cell transplant was going to be the hardest thing I was going to endure, I was very thankful for this upcoming treatment, and I felt at peace. Back in January, our prayer warrior friend Michaela had booked a return visit for the end of July, when I should have been recovering from the transplant. However, it turned out to be the day before. Again, we spent a lot of time in prayer together. I was spiritually and emotionally strengthened through that time of prayer. I'm also grateful for the break, as it gave time for my body to heal and get stronger. The transplant proved to be very difficult, even harder than I anticipated. I was very sick for 3.5 weeks. On the fourth week, I began to eat a little and regain some strength. Since then, I've been recovering very quickly, and I'm very grateful for that too. It appears the transplant was successful. The cancer is undetectable in my blood work, but it's too early for the doctors to say that I'm in remission. I have to wait 2 more months before I'll know. I'm very grateful for the care I've received from the medical team. And I'm grateful for my angel that came in the form of Nurse Matt. On the second try of harvesting my stem cells, things were not going well in the mornings. He would come into my room, even though I wasn't his patient, and adjust the needles in my arms. Then, miraculously, the collection started to work. I believe God sent him to help me. One of the reasons I have hope for my future is because of the advances in the medical treatments being made. Many new drugs have been developed and look promising. And the FDA just gave approval for CAR T cell therapy to be used in treatment of multiple myeloma. Recently, I listened to a presentation from a top researcher, medical doctor, and expert on this cancer. He believes in the near future, multiple myeloma will become classified as a chronic illness instead of an incurable illness. The journey from darkness to hope was not always easy. But I had a lot of help from a lot of people along the way. I wish I could mention everyone by name and tell you about all the love and encouragement I received, but again, we'd be here for hours. These people were my figures of hope. Most of them never even realized the impact they have had. They planted seeds of light into my darkness. They lifted and carried me through prayer. They shared in my pain and suffering. I'll tell you about some of the ways these people encouraged and supported me. My grandchildren and their visits and their artwork brightened my days, especially one of my granddaughter Ashton's pictures. She drew it on the day she learned I was sick. It is a picture of the two of us. We are sitting on the dock at the lake in a storm, with a huge fish jumping out of the lake. I'm sure she had no idea of the storm I was entering into at the time she drew it. I look at this picture every day. It reminds me that Jesus is with me in the storm. It also reminds me of the enjoyment Ashton and I have experienced storm watching together. My friends, I don't know how Don and I would have made it through this time without them. Ruth Ann and Paul and Bonnie and Al walked very closely with us. The list of all the ways they supported us is lengthy. They poured out so much love and energy into our lives. One of the memorable things they did was to pick us up a few days before Christmas last year to view the Christmas light displays around Langley and Surrey, because I couldn't attend other types of Christmas events. We drove around listening to Christmas carols and drinking Starbucks coffee. It was a nice evening. I don't have the words to express my gratitude for their support. There were many, many friends who texted and emailed just to say, I'm thinking of you today. There were many friends like Irene that brought me thoughtful meals and thoughtful treats that met my dietary restrictions. My girlfriend Jackie, who happens to be a nurse, came from California to take care of me for a week and give Don a bit of a break. She also visited three other times during the past year. Jackie and I have been friends for 45 years, and it's so special that she came and spent so much time with me. Had a friend gave me a Jesus Always devotional, which felt like each daily message was written specifically for me during those first few months. The friends that would go for walks with me, walks were one of the few things that I could do outside my home. The friends that I had not seen for a long time, phoning, emailing, and visiting, it was so nice reconnecting with them. My friends Joanne and Catherine, that are nurses who came over to give me injections so I didn't have to go to the doctor's office for them. The friends who would go to my chemo treatments with me, the friends that would come over to visit, those visits were so uplifting and therapeutic. Sometimes there was no talking, they would just sit with me. Little did I know then, when I was in my darkness, when I could not hear God's voice, He was speaking to me through them. And my friend Steph, who prayed for me while knitting me a blanket. This was the first time she knitted a blanket and took her a long time to make. So she was praying for me a lot. I used this blanket often while recovering from my transplant. I would literally be wrapped in her prayers. My Schmidt and Funk family, my co-workers, have poured out so much love on Dawn and me. They blessed us with 6 months of house cleaning, meals, baking, and for me alone, they gave me comfortable clothing, blankets, all kinds of lotions, beauty products, and wonderful smelly stuff, and this water cup. Their thoughtfulness touched my heart deeply. I believe Shannon was the organizer of the baskets of love we received. My girls, Deanna, Christine, and Kelsey, words cannot express the love I felt from them during this past year. They supported and helped me so much. If I begin talking about all that they did for me, I'll just break down and cry, so I won't. Except to say how meaningful it was that they each used 1 week of their summer holidays to be with Don and I in Vancouver during my stem cell transplant. Their presence brought us so much comfort. My boys, Matt and Joel and Rob, they loved on us well. Matt and Rob sat for hours upon hours in the hospital with us, and Joel sending us long, beautiful letters. Don was my rock, my caregiver who never left my side. Words just can't express. Again, I'll be a crying mess to say more. Kevin and Sharon, the leadership team, our life group, and the rest of the Coast Hills Church family that prayed for me, Again, words can't express how meaningful it was to know I was being prayed for. Living with uncertainty has been very hard for me. But the two spiritual practices that helped me move from darkness of uncertainty to the light of hope was being continually thankful and grateful for the blessings I received each day. My journals are filled with the things I was grateful for, and looking back, I see it was through gratitude that my trust in God slowly returned. My other practice was to live in the moment. I learned that I can't see or feel God in the future, but I can by living in the here and now. There have been many blessings in this journey. I have learned how deeply loved I am, and for this, I am so, so grateful. My way back to hope may sound naive to some and very simplistic to others, but it is really through the love of my family and friends. Their love guided me. Their love shone a light into my darkness. It was the love, acts of kindness, and the army of prayers that brought me hope. Hope that I can have a future filled with joy and meaning. If you happen to be in the darkness now or find yourself in the future, I pray that you'll be gentle but honest with yourself. Don't be afraid to tell God what you're really thinking and feeling. Know that transformation and strengthening of faith can happen in darkness. If you get stuck in the darkness too long, I encourage you to reach out to someone who's been there, or a pastor or a spiritual director to help you. And remember that even though you may not feel it, believe in the promise that God is always with you and he will sustain you. And to those of you who know someone who is hurting, in pain, or is suffering in darkness, pray for them, yes, but also reach out to them in whichever way you can. If God puts someone on your heart, reach out. You never know if that little thing you do will be the catalyst to bringing hope into their darkness. You could be their hidden figure of hope.